Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. My name is Phil Strum. So glad you joined me today. My guest this week is one of the hottest wrestlers in all of AEW, Swerve Strickland. We've had Swerve on the show before. He's taking on Hangman Adam Page in one of the feature matches of the new AEW pay-per-view event Wrestle Dream on Sunday, October 1st at the Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, which is basically Swerve's neck of the woods. Swerve is so cool in his delivery, absolutely seamless in the ring, and he pretty much hits every at-bat and gets it out of the park. What's funny about that is that his whole program with Hangman Adam Page is exactly about that, about the opportunities that he gets. So here we go right now with my interview with Swerve Strickland. So pleased to be joined once again by one of the hottest talents in pro wrestling, the one and only Swerve Strickland. Swerve, thank you so much for joining me this week on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations.
Thank you for having me, man. Appreciate you.
So you're in one of the feature matches at Wrestle Dream in Seattle against Hangman Adam Page. As far as I'm concerned, that's one of the top reasons to order that show and watch it. What are your thoughts on Hangman in the ring and his style going up against your style and just what people can expect from that match?
Man, with his style, it's so like it's almost barbaric if you look back at a lot of his historic matches, with the death matches with Jon Moxley, then like with Lance Archer, which is probably one of the most underrated, like brutal matches in the company's history. And you look back at just those two, you can see how barbaric and dangerous this dude can be. And somewhere along the lines, I feel like he hasn't shown that in such a long time. So leave it to me to be the agitator and bring that out of him, you know, and that's kind of what I'm here for. And the sense of me being so aggravating to him, I want to beat him at that level. So there's no question on why Swerve is who he is and who I say I am. You know, there's still doubters out there in the social media world and the media world, the podcast world and stuff like that. Cause I listen to everything. I see and hear everything. I don't always acknowledge everything, but I do see and hear everything that's out there. That's kind of what keeps the chip on my shoulder, you know? So now when I go out there October 1st at Wrestle Dream in Seattle and I beat the brakes off of him while he's saying he's bringing his best, there better not be any more conversation about, do I deserve this? Did I live up to the hype or any of this other bull crap that I hear? You know what I mean? No, like this is, as much as this is for the city of Seattle, and as much as this is for AEW with Wrestle Dream, and as much as this is for Hangman Page, this is way more for me.
And I don't even know how anybody can doubt you at this point. And I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of noise out there all the time for everything, but I feel like every time you've been given the mic or put in the ring, you hit a home run. Like, you're one of the most consistent guys I can think of in pro wrestling, regardless of where you've been. How easy did those segments on the mic with you and Hangman kind of flow for you? How natural was that for you?
It wasn't easy at all. I don't think, like, for me, I feel like the toughest part of this industry is being able to just speak, you know, like speak like in a believable way, speak in a way that's original, speak in a way that is not so cliche and formulaic, that you've heard a million times, that you've like, that you can see a lot of where the conversation is going before they even start, like a mile away. That's so hard, especially when like some of the greatest talkers of all time I've already like come and gone, and like either are already out of the industry or they're on their way out of the industry. To find your own voice is tough. And for me, this is the most mic time I've ever got in my career, like on live TV, I would say. You know, like I've had some, I had like the mic a couple times in WWE and NXT, but that was a lot of shared mic time. But with AEW, this is like, I was like 6 minutes straight of talking and telling a story and building this hype and building this energy and like being original and like trying to find my voice and then like present it to someone who's done this time and time again. It's been some of the greatest that's ever stepped foot in this ring, stepped foot in this business, you know, like that's a lot of pressure. So it can be a little scary at times, but it's like, that's where you got to level up. That's where I had to level up. I had to become something. I had to become someone and make a statement and make a point. And then like, oh man, okay, I got it. Now do it again. Oh, okay. Now I got to find that energy again and really find out who you really are. And you got to do it all over again. You got to make sure not only you top it, but make sure you still keep who you were the first time.
Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to that match. So, you know, congratulations on all the stuff that you guys were able to put together to hype that, because you got me at this point. So you probably didn't have to do that much work for me, but I think you guys are doing a pretty good job. In doing research, I did discover that you were on opposite sides of an 8-man tag team match with Hangman in 2015 in North Carolina. Yeah. You, Moose, Tim Donston, Tommaso Ciampa against Paige, Corey Hollis, John Skyler, and Gunner. What do you remember about that, and what has changed about you guys since 2015?
Oh man, that was before he became like this international sensation in Japan. You know, I remember Adam was like such a young guy. He didn't have the size that he had today. And I didn't know much about him then. And it's crazy how like this year is where I'm starting to learn so much more about the guy, you know? And with that being said, this is where I'm like using a lot of that against him. And today, but at that time, I don't even believe we even like interacted much. I think we might have touched like 2 times in that match. Wow. That was the first time. That was the only time I was ever in the ring with Ciampa as well. But a lot of those guys I ended up working with later on in my career. But Hangman, I knew he was talented, but when he started like going out, venturing out, really becoming the Hangman Page, the persona, that's where I was like, okay, this guy's definitely on the next level.
And you mentioned the Young Bucks in that first interview that you did too, and they were also recently on your show. And obviously they're associated closely with Hangman and Kenny. What are your thoughts on the Elite's legacy in pro wrestling with AEW and also them as talents?
Them as talents, they're second to none, in my opinion. Because I was on the independent scene when they were really, really just on fire, when they made it into Hot Topic and they were just everywhere. It was like a movement. You had to be there type of thing. You know what I mean? Like they're not as accessible to the independents and like outside of AEW. And so that's why I say you just had to have been there in that time, and especially to be on the shows as a worker alongside them, seeing them in the locker room, seeing like the type of influence they had on so many of their young talents, the style, the Dragon Gate style of wrestling that they took and captivated and made it their own and Americanized it and made it so much more entertaining and took a lot of American influences. But then they end up finding themselves in it and then making a lot of satire and jokes, inside jokes that only wrestling fans would know, and then putting it into the bits, into the ring. Like, man, they're truly trailblazers in this industry, and I look up to them so much. And then now to like know that I'm facing off with them, I'm kind of I faced off with the Bucks before throughout my career on the Indies, but now like we're truly like adversaries now, you know, and it's all because of the connection with Hangman Page. Yeah. We are truly adversaries. It's not like we're just having a match just to entertain this city, this crowd, this show, and then we like have the match, shake hands, and we're off to the next city. No, I got to see you next week. There's a true problem. You're associated with this guy who's my enemy. That makes you enemies. You know, you support him, then, you know, you're a part of the problem in my eyes. And with like the Mogul Embassy, with Nana, with Toa, with Brian Cage, you know, with Khan, these guys have to take you out in order to achieve our goal and my goal, you know? And I think that's now you're going to have to probably see a different side of the Bucks now, just because they're dealing with us.
And I think that's such a great place for you to be and for the Mogul Embassy to be, is because, you know, you could be a top guy all you want in the wrestling business, but you need guys to work with. And you guys are such a natural combination for them. I wanted to get your thoughts a little bit on the Mogul Embassy. I guess, starting with the Gates of Agony and with Brian Cage, just impressions of them as talents, as you've gotten to see them and work with them a little bit.
Just Brian Cage alone is like probably one of the most like five tool players in pro wrestling. There's nothing this man can't do. He's charismatic. He has a great look. He can be funny. He can be dangerous. He can be entertaining. He could do so many different things before he even gets in the ring, and you can't help but you can't miss him, you know. And then his mind for the wrestling business and being in the ring is like, I still haven't met anybody that's quite like his, you know what I mean? They have the Kenny Omegas and great minds of the business. You have like the Bryan Danielson has a great mind for these type of things. You have Jericho, great mind for these type of things. But I think Brian Cage's mind for this in ring is so underrated because with AEW, you're around so many great minds. You even have a Sting, you have a Mark Henry, you have a Jeff Jarrett, you have a JR, a Taz. There's so many great minds in this locker room that you kind of like miss out on a Brian Cage who has a great mind for it as well. And the Mogul Embassy is getting him more and more on television to showcase how brilliant his mind is for what he does. Then you have Bishop Khan and Toa, you know, like right now you're seeing the Islander of Toa. You're seeing him become more and more humanized a little bit and you're getting a little bit more personality out of him. You're going to start over the next couple weeks to months, you're going to start understanding the person behind the maniac that is Toa Leon, you know, and just not just the fact that he's just a bulldozer that can run through you. Bishop Khan is coming into his own, understanding what his worth is. And that's the most important thing about going out there and like being in a group, being in a faction, knowing your worth in that faction. Khan is no understanding that, and he's going to start glowing the more he gets in there. And the fact that he's in there with the Bucks now, he's really, they're going to establish how much his worth is, you know. Yeah. And then Nana has just become this viral sensation. And yeah, it's crazy, like 20 years later, like I've known this man for like almost 15 years. And we've always been, almost 15 years I've known him, but we never worked together because he was always in Ring of Honor. I wasn't signed to Ring of Honor. I was more on the international independence and stuff. But seeing the resurgence of Nana as just a great, brilliant personality, a fantastic manager, on-screen character, on-screen charisma, and that he is the genuine spark of making the most of his time in AEW this past year in 2023, with him being featured on Dynamite, Rampage, Collision, you know, and Ring of Honor all in the same week at the same time, is hustle, that is grind, that is understand, like, yo, this is my role, and I'm gonna do it to the best of my ability, and I'm gonna exceed the expectations of myself. And he just brings so much more to me with how I've been portraying myself, and Nana being just like one of the brilliant characters that just around me. And he actually brings out a lot more sinister to the Swerve character, if you don't notice that, you know. It's like, I don't want to reveal too much, but just pay attention to a little more how we interact over the months.
Interesting. I had the pleasure of being at Arthur Ashe Stadium last week when you came out, watching the crowd's reaction to Nana at ringside, just doing the dance as soon as your music hit was tremendous.
I guarantee you never seen a manager get a reaction like that in wrestling. You can go ahead and try to find me one manager in anywhere in the world that gets a reaction like that.
It's fantastic. Like you said, I mean, I had the pleasure of meeting him back in 2004. I knew somebody who knew somebody who was going to Johnny Rods with him, actually, a little bit before that, and was at a Ring of Honor show in 2004. Just nicest guy. But like you said, like, this opportunity coming 20 something years into his career is it's fantastic for him, and he's absolutely hitting a home run.
I feel like AEW has been like the best place for career resurgences, when we're seeing what Nana's doing, we're seeing what Christian is doing, seeing what Billy Gunn is doing, seeing what Sting is doing. It's been remarkable to see that kind of stuff. And like without an AEW, you don't see this.
What kind of things can you learn from a guy like Nana?
For me, what I will say, he's been giving me perception. So now I look at things with four eyes rather than two, if that makes sense. It's easy to look through the window from one side, but you got to have a reflection looking through the other way to make sure that you are confident in what you're about to deliver. And he's always like, hey, don't forget this. This is happening, but don't forget this. And I'm like, you're right. I would have missed that if you wouldn't have pointed that perspective out. That's the value in his honest perspective, too. It's not bullshit. It's not like putting nothing like in your head that's to boost you, to gas you up or to blow smoke up your ass in a sense. It's true, honest perception and perspective on things that you could miss, and it's easy to miss, especially when you're on TV now so much. It's easy to miss a lot of those small things and just to go out there and just do it and you get the routine over with. No, you want to, like, having someone like that back you up too, and to like, hey, just know you don't got to worry about this. I got this covered. That's what Nana has been for me the last couple of months.
Very good. So this show is happening in Seattle. You're from Tacoma, I believe it is. Does it mean something more to you to be in a headline spot on a show in the Pacific Northwest?
Absolutely. I don't take that lightly at all.
How familiar are you with the wrestling and the wrestling history of the Pacific Northwest? I know Defy is kind of the independent brand there now. Obviously, Don Owens, Portland Wrestling from before that, the generation prior. Just how important is wrestling in the Pacific Northwest and just in general?
For me, it's important to keep it alive. And like since 2015, we've been doing that with Defy Wrestling. And, I was the first main event on Defy with Cody Rhodes. And it's ever since then, it's been a hotbed and people needed more of it. And now seeing all the people that's come through there are coming past and coming through are like people that have main evented like Tokyo Domes and main evented like WrestleManias or main evented all outs and double or nothings and stuff. They are now coming through Defy. That's major, you know. And it's all started from building that from scratch. Now you're seeing people from Defy make it into AEW and get contracts and go elsewhere and get seen on TV because now it's such a hotbed. I'm like, all right, we need to check out who's coming out of there and stuff. Now, and like doing what we did on AEW with like the showing, Darby showing the wrestling school and how big that will and of importance was with giving Nick Wayne that contract in Defy, putting that on national TV on blast. Hopefully that builds more people that want to get into this wrestling business and go through Defy and go to the Buddy Wayne Academy. I don't know if they want to go there as much anymore, knowing the fact that I could show up there and like bust you open and have you bleed in the pool of your own blood. I don't know if you want to, but at least, you know, we put it on the map in a sense.
What did it mean to you to get in? I mean, I noticed, you know, just looking at some of your history in Defy, you wrestled Cage there, you wrestled Christopher Daniels there, you wrestled Darby Allin and Nick Wayne there and worked with them lately. You know, what did that make it more special with folks that you're already familiar with from home, basically?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All those times built me. They built me who I am. They built what Swerve is now to this day. It's built that comfortability. It's built that confidence. It's built the look is built, the aura, the energy that I knew that like it, that I knew what I was doing was right, you know. I knew I was painting with the right brushes and using the right techniques, and it was original.
What do you see in a guy like Nick Wayne if you had to kind of evaluate him now from being in the ring with him a couple times?
Right now, I see humility. And that's for someone that young who's got that much experience, who's like traveled already, it's really easy to lose yourself. And he is truly a remarkable person before he even gets in the ring. And then when you see him in the ring, he's still a remarkable person that you can't just help but root for, cheer for, you know. His athletic ability has always been there. But from the day I first saw him in Defy, I already knew. I was like, this is the guy. This is the kid, you know. And just Darby handing him the contract, he already believed it and knew it too. And that testament to Tony Khan for believing in them, you know. And I believe me getting in the ring with them in those two matches that we've done in Defy gave Tony Khan all the faith and belief that, like, he made the right decision giving him the contract. Now he's going through this with you don't hear much of negativity about the kid. Yeah. Like I said, and from all that he's accomplished going to Japan and all this stuff already, it would be easy to lose sight of that, you know?
And I wanted to ask you too, the experience for you and AEW for that matter, wrestling at Wembley Stadium, what was that like for you?
It felt like we were in a small city inside of a city. That's how big Wembley was. It was like, oh my God. I'm like, you don't even see people anymore. You just see lights. That experience was like, I wanted to walk out there like I was a prize fighter. And I feel like we accomplished that, you know, with the performance from Flash Garments, with DJ Who Kid by my side and Nana doing his dance in the middle and the fire blowing up from behind, coming out to my own song as well. That's a huge accomplishment, you know. Then to get grabbing the mic, I was like, I'm gonna take this moment. This is for me. And doing the Who's House and hearing 80,000 people scream back Swerve's House. I'm like, okay, so y'all know me. Y'all know my legacy. Y'all know what I've been doing. And y'all are here for it because y'all know me. Y'all not just here to just like see Sting. It's easy to get lost in that. You're not here to just see Christian. Y'all know me and y'all here to see me too.
Nice. Anything upcoming musically for you that you can talk about?
This weekend, I'm dropping like two music videos on the 30th. September 30th is my birthday, actually. I'm dropping the Work It video. And October 1st, I'm dropping These Dreams on the day of Wrestle Dreams. So kind of poetic how that worked out. And then October 2nd, I'm dropping a cypher with me and the Emmett team, we call them. It stands for Every Move Made Includes the Team, featuring myself, Anthony King, who does the weekly wrap-ups for AEW on social media. So check him out at Anthony King with an I in Anthony. And Montezy, TZ Jones, who just came out and performed for Sammy Guevara at Grand Slam in New York at Arthur Ashe. He's on there too. We're building a mixtape, all early 2000s hip hop beats stuff. So we got that coming out soon. And we're just giving you a little sample size of what we've been working on in the studio on October 2nd on our YouTube page, youtube.com/SwerveCityPodcast. So check us out.
Very good. Well, congratulations on that. We're going to move on to something we call the three count now. It's going to be three quick questions and your answers. First question, who is your favorite wrestler that people might not be familiar with?
Shima.
And why?
He's one of the first Japanese talents that I really gravitated to, with this high speed, fast style, a little bit of comedy as well. He was at the time in Dragon Gate. He was bringing up and building the Ricochets, the Pacs, the UHA Nations or Apollo Crews at the time, Rich Swann, you know, he was doing a lot of big, great things for them. So, and especially when he was coming over to America and working with Evolve and stuff, like, man, he was just, he was awesome for that time period. That old, the 2008, 2009 era of indie wrestling, he was on fire at the time. So I'd say him and Yamato.
Interesting. I think what's crazy about Shima too is I don't think people realize that he goes back so far that he actually wrestled in WCW towards the end, and he was, I believe, Shima Nobunaga, he was known as then. So,
yes.
Second question: when you're not wrestling or making music, what is Swerve doing?
Playing video games.
Yeah,
that's where I clear my mind and get away from it, because I just that's where a lot of ideas that kind of spring out of nowhere. Because it's kind of like just mindless zombie playing Madden or Mortal Kombat or Metal Gear Solid. I just like zombie, like play the game, and like my body goes on autopilot. It's almost, that's kind of like my meditation. And that's where like a lot of those ideas come from. That's where a lot of my material for my promos come from. It's like, oh, what if I, and then it comes from that. And just like letting my mind go and like wander off into space and stuff like that. Digital space, you could, I could say. And, or I'm visiting my children.
Nice, nice. And what's last question? What's the best part about being from the state of Washington?
The best part, I don't know. Like I just know coming back here, I feel a lot closer to it every time I'm back in the state. For some reason, I feel connected to this place. And I wasn't here since like the first Defy show was the first time I ever came back to Seattle. And actually promoting it leading up to Defy, the first Defy one. That was my first time coming back to Seattle since I was born. And then ever since then, I was like, I got to keep coming back here. So for me, I love the city itself. There's so much here, you know.
Very good. Well, Wrestle Dream in Seattle this Sunday, Swerve versus Hangman Adam Page. Swerve, happy early birthday. And again, thanks so much for joining me today on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thanks again, everyone, for joining me today on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I'd like to thank Swerve Strickland once again for joining me today. I'd also like to thank John Schneider at AEW for helping set this up. Follow me on Twitter at Under the Ring and on Threads at PJ Strum for the latest guest announcements, and have a great week, everyone.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.